And now to a book that's very quickly become recognised as something of an instant classic of cultural history. It's called The Revolution Was Televised, The Cops, Crooks, Slingers and Slayers Who Changed TV Drama Forever. It charts the dramatic changes we've seen in the last decade or so on the not-so-small-anymore screen. It's by the American TV critic and blogger Alan Sepinwall, and it's been named as one of the top 10 books of the year by the formidable New York Times reviewer Machiko Kakutani. Now, that's quite an achievement given that the book was actually self-published. An Australian edition was released last month by Black Ink Books, and I'm pleased to say that Alan Sepinwall joins us on the line from San Diego. Hi, Alan, and welcome to The List.
Thank you for having me.
Now, you start this book by writing rather movingly about your early days as a TV critic in the mid-90s and about how you felt privileged to be covering a medium that you saw as having become as good as it could possibly get. Now, you say you were wrong. What were you wrong about?
Well, when I came on the job in the summer of 1996, this was what was considered to be, you know, one of the golden ages of television. There was NYPD Blue, there was Homicide, there was ER, there was Law and Order. There were a lot of these great dramas in addition to really sort of smart comedies like Seinfeld. And I was looking at a lot of these shows, and I was obsessed with NYPD Blue in particular, and saying to myself, well, God, this is everything I've ever imagined that TV can be. This is all that I've dreamed about. TV has reached its maximum potential, and I am here, and this is fantastic. And then within 3 years, The Sopranos debuted and completely redefined my expectations for what TV could actually do.
At that time in the early 90s, the TV was actually on the brink of what you call a revolution. And up until that time, the paradigm was all about the mass audience. Success, you write, was about being the broadest, most palatable work. But by the late 90s, that audience was really beginning to fragment. Now, what was causing that, and what effect did it have on drama content?
Well, what happened, you know, in America, I grew up, and there were basically three networks. There was ABC, NBC, and CBS. There was a little bit of public television. Some people had local stations, but that was basically it. So they had the marketplace cornered. They were just sort of aiming for a big tent philosophy. The show that brought the most number of eyeballs won, and usually you won the most number of eyeballs by being the least objectionable. And then as the 90s went along, more and more people had cable television in their homes. People started to get the internet in their homes. And so suddenly there were alternatives. You could put on HBO and they started doing original programming. You could put on these other channels and they started doing their own original programming. And so the audience that the networks got started getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And today, some of the shows on the big networks get ratings that, you know, if I were to have a time machine and go back to 1996, 97 and show them to an executive at that network, they would just laugh at me because it's ridiculous. And so what happened was, as the audience fragmented, suddenly it became less important about getting the most eyeballs than about getting the right eyeballs and doing a show that got people so obsessed that they didn't want to miss a single episode.
And you say that film was going through a difficult time as well, and this allowed television to come out from under its shadow.
Well, what happened was, as we started to move into the 21st century, the movie business became almost entirely blockbuster and franchise, you know, tentpole film-driven. If it didn't have a superhero in it, if it didn't have a lot of explosions in it, if it didn't have a brand name in it, it became much, much harder to get a movie made than it used to be. And so there's all sorts of films that once upon a time not only would have won Oscars, but would have been a fairly successful across-the-board hit, sort of adult drama. Those weren't getting made anymore, and so someone had to pick up the slack. That turned out to be television. You know, you ask people what the great movie of America was in the start of the 21st century, and I would say it's The Sopranos or The Wire. It's not a movie.
Well, let's name some names. You say that there's been some truly quality TV drama before the revolution that you've identified, and you say they're building blocks, and among them, I think you've named some already. There's Hill Street Blues, St. Elsewhere, Cheers, Miami Vice, Twin Peaks, NYPD Blue, The X-Files, ER. But you say that the real beginning of this revolution was the prison drama Oz, which was created for HBO by Tom Fontana. Now, what was it doing that was so new and so different?
Well, Fontana had worked. He'd done St. Elsewhere. He'd done Homicide. He had also worked in network TV and had done really well with it. The other shows had sort of bent the rule book. This one just threw the rule book into a trash can and lit it on fire. There had been all these rules about you have to have likable protagonists, you have to have relatable protagonists, you can only push things so far, you know, the audience has to want to come back, the audience has to want to feel happy at the end of the hour. And this was a really brutal show about terrible, terrible people incarcerated for horrible crimes, treating each other violently and brutally, and it was fantastic. And it brought in all these actors who you wouldn't necessarily think of as doing television. It discovered certain actors, and HBO discovered that there was an audience for that, and that gave them the confidence to say, all right, fine, we'll make this show about the Jersey mobster who's, you know, henpecked by his mother and goes to a psychiatrist.
You're talking about The Sopranos, David Chase's Sopranos, also yeah. from HBO, which mixed psychiatry with a great mob story. Is it this extremity? Is it the ability for storyline creators just to go to extremes that's made it so different and so, well, creative?
No, that's absolutely the case. There was, you know, as much as I loved NYPD Blue, there was only so far they could take that show's hero, Sipowicz, and no farther, and slowly as that show went along, they softened his edges and they softened his edges and they softened his edges until eventually he was just a cuddly old teddy bear. If you watch The Sopranos, Tony Soprano gets worse as the series goes along. If you watch Breaking Bad now, Walter White has gotten much worse as it's gone along. These shows really push your expectations for television, your expectations for the characters. It makes you question your loyalty. You sort of tune in and you're empathizing with these people. And then you realize after a while, wait a minute, I've kind of made a deal with the devil here, but I'm going to keep watching because this is so well made.
You've actually described The Wire as the great American novel for television. Is that what's happening, that we're seeing stories that are so rich and so complicated and such extraordinary character arcs that we're really, it is equivalent to novels?
Some of the shows are definitely equivalent to novels. I would say Tony Soprano and Walter White, I would put them up against any literary character of the 20th century. The Wire tells this great sweeping saga of an American city and its death throes, you know, through the eyes of cops and drug dealers and eventually politicians and teachers and reporters and kids. So TV didn't used to aspire to that. TV used to be, here's a story, you're going to tune into an episode, you're going to get a complete story by the end of the hour, that's all you need. Here was a show that said, well, you're not going to get any sort of complete experience in the space of an hour. This is just a chapter in a book, that's how we're viewing it. You have to watch all 13 to truly appreciate it, but if you do watch all 13, it will be a far more powerful and rewarding experience than any you've had on these shows that do standalone episodes.
Alan, you've picked out 12 great millennial dramas around which you construct your thesis. Along with Oz, you name The Wire, Deadwood, The Shield, Lost, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, 24, Battlestar Galactica, Friday Night Lights, Mad Men and Breaking Bad. Now, some of these are more familiar to Australian audiences than others. It's a very disparate list. There's stories from the past, stories from outer space. Is there anything that they share in common?
I think they share a few things in common. In most cases, what you had were TV shows where, through a variety of circumstances, which were different in virtually every case, the creators of these shows wound up getting sort of almost unprecedented before this period freedom in terms of what they wanted to do. HBO was the Wild West. There were no rules there. They just sort of said to their creators, you go do what you want, we trust you. TV is so often micromanaged by executives, and there's just so many cooks in the kitchen that you wind up with something that's completely bland, and that did not happen here because all of these people were allowed to do exactly what they wanted to do, and with these shows, what they wanted to do was really brilliant.
And at the same time, the internet was just totally transforming the way TV audiences were interacting with these shows. What impact do you think that's had?
Oh, enormously. I don't know that a show like Lost could have worked without the internet. This was a show that was designed for people to immediately go onto message boards and news groups and eventually Twitter to discuss it after each episode and to break it down and analyze it. Mad Men absolutely is a show that begs for the kind of sort of long-form dissertations that I do after every episode on my blog and just sort of people analyzing all the imagery and symbolism. And that's it has the literary quality that a lot of other shows did not aspire to in the past, in part because there was no way for people to discuss it like this. So the internet has been an enormous resource and augmenting factor to what's made these shows successful.
Alan Sepinwall, is the revolution over? Have we seen this great period of change? And from here on, is it going to be more or less more of the same?
I don't think so. One of the metaphors that a lot of the creators in the book used, and which I mentioned before, was this idea of the Wild West, where at a certain point the frontier gets tamed, and then rules are put in place, and things are more structured than they were before. And that's been true to an extent. And HBO is a much more established place than it used to be. FX, AMC has big commercial successes and all of that. And more you have these different outlets starting to get new original programming. Sometimes it's a new channel. Sometimes it's a new distribution service. Netflix is starting to make their own shows, and that's huge. And they're basically like HBO was 15 years ago, where there are no rules, and they can do whatever it is that they want. And that's a circumstance in which, in theory, greatness can really blossom.
Well, aren't we lucky to be living in this time? Thank you very much for being our guest today, Alan.
Thank you for having me, Kathy.
Alan Sepinwall is a TV critic for HitFix.com. He has a regular blog called What's Alan Watching? The book is The Revolution Was Televised, The Cops, The Crooks, Slingers and Slayers Who Changed TV Drama Forever. And it's published in Australia by Black Ink Books.